Monster Man, episode 232, Pech and Petipalp. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode sees us continuing our journey through the P&Q chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we begin, a brief technical note. This part of the chapter is going to be full of plosives, that is to say, P sounds. I mean, P isn't the only plosive, but it's the important one in the P and Q chapter. Specifically, I'm going to say words like pedipalp a lot. And I have a pop filter on this microphone, and I apparently I need to get a new one because I'm having to edit these down pretty fiercely. I will do my best, but if it occasionally kind of the levels are off, that's because a plosive was way off and I had to do whatever the opposite of amplifying it is. Anyway, let's talk about the Pech and the Petipalp. Let's begin with the Pech. Now, the Pech is a creature from Scottish folklore. They are little fairy or brownie-type creatures. They are usually, in the folktales where they appear, is usually believed that they lived a long time ago and that they no longer exist, right? So this is not an uncommon category of kind of fairy creature. There's the idea that inexplicable artifacts or parts of the landscape are said to have been built by them. So, for instance, stone blades, which I assume are probably prehistoric tools like bark scrapers or things like that, are referred to, at least according to Robert Chambers' The Scottish Antiquary. No, not that Robert Chambers, just a guy who wrote a book called The Scottish Antiquary. They're called Pex knives. And similarly, there are some prehistoric ruins, or not even prehistoric, but things like Pictish brochs, which are sometimes attributed to the ideas that they were built by these pechs. And so pechs are said to be exceptionally strong. So there's a story, again, in the Scottish Antiquary, where an old pech is dying, and he wants to feel his son's arm muscles, or their wrists, maybe, to, you know, make sure that they're good, strong men. He's blind. And the sons decide to play a prank on him, and they give him like a metal cup instead of their arm, but he just crushes it in his hand. He goes, oh, well, yeah, it's pretty good, but it's not as good as it used to be when I was a young man, and then he dies. So the description of the pecs from Chambers is that they were short, red-haired people with long arms, and that they had big feet, which they could use as umbrellas if it rained. You could turn upside down and protect themselves from the rain with their umbrella feet. So the pech of Dungeons & Dragons is basically that. It's a long-limbed, subterranean little person, and they aren't especially good at working stone, which I guess is, you know, from that origin of stone artifacts and stone structures being attributed to these mysterious pecs. You can definitely imagine a little community of them living in a remote area and the PCs having to negotiate with them, like they need to get into a dungeon that's blocked up or they have some other task that requires a lot of stone working. You can definitely see how the pecs could make useful allies, but at the same time, if we're accepting that they're good stone working little folk, then you can imagine that they would be cantankerous and difficult to deal with, and that they might have some demands that the PCs would have to meet. And overall, I think that they are a pretty solid little tribe of fairy creatures. And I have been known to complain about the number of brownies, pixies, sprites, boggarts, pecans, and so on and so forth, and Kilmulises and what have you, that appear in the Dungeons & Dragons monster books. That is to say that they're an awful lot of little, kind of basically mischievous or beneficent rural sprite-type creatures, many of them taken from Scottish folklore. But actually, I quite like the pecs. And I sort of wonder if the pec, the boobry, the bacon, and so on, may not all be the result of Gary Gygax or, you know, some other TSR person reading a book on Scottish folklore, possibly indeed Chambers' Scottish Antiquary, or one that came from that source. A lot of popular books of folklore basically recapitulating older 19th and early 20th century folkloric texts without necessarily making that clear. So yeah, I think the pecs, not only, you know, they're probably their least interesting when the PCs are fighting them, although their wide variety of stone-shaping powers could make them very dangerous opponents in an underground environment, but they're probably more interesting when you have to interact with them because those powers are useful to you and you need their help. Next up, we have the Petipalps. So Petipalpi was once the name of an order of arthropods. And I believe that the taxonomy has changed since then, although apparently not everyone quite agrees on this taxonomy. But it encompasses what's clearly being described here are what are called whip scorpions. So not insects, they have eight legs, sort of, much like scorpions, but they lack the scorpion's distinctive stinging tail. Instead, they have a stingless flagella, hence the name whip scorpions, even though I think not all species actually have that whip, or it's not as noticeable in all of them. I thought that these were the same as the creatures called pseudoscorpions, but apparently I am wrong. And there's another category that falls within that former order Pedipalpi, whip arachnids, but I don't know the difference there. Anyway, now although they have eight legs, they only walk on six of them. The front two legs are actually sensing legs, they're sort of antenna-like sensory organs. And the two pincers at the front are not legs at all, but highly developed pedipalps. That is to say, they're actually part of the mouth parts. If you've listened to my episode on giant spiders, or spiders, comma, giant, then you'll see that one of the things I think about is how much more interesting does this creature become if you scale it up to giant size. And in the case of the pedipalps, it's actually not super interesting because they're not that large. You can see how there would be some horror in being grabbed by this creature's pedipalps and then essentially kind of ground to death against the teeth on the insides of the pedipalps while you're basically being held in its clutches. That's quite a scary idea. Except that even the biggest of these is only size medium. So they're not exactly going to catch a person in their grasp. Some types of whip scorpions are also called vinegaroons, and this is because they're able to project a cloud of acid gives off a distinctive scent, and I guess the idea is to discourage predators. And so one of the three pedipalps, the giant pedipalp, has an ability to do something like this, which is pretty cool. One thing that might be interesting is, now I seem to recall, this might be pseudoscorpions rather than whip scorpions, but I seem to recall that they are actually generally regarded as not that bad to have around because they prey on many insect species that could be more harmful. They may have been pseudoscorpions, but I definitely once played a character who was a librarian who actually cultivated a colony of, you know, regular real world size little pseudoscorpions, or possibly whip scorpions, in his library because they eat insects that can be harmful to books, but they're not harmful to the books themselves. So I do like the idea that these giant pedipalps are created from the regular whip scorpions for the same purpose, that like, oh well, the giant book mites got out, so now we're going to create giant pedipalps to chase them down. So the pedipalps are fun. I think they work best because both the spider, comma, giant and the scorpion, comma, giant already exist, and this seems like a strange creature that isn't really one or the other. So you'll see this strange arthropod climbing around and be like, well, is it an insect? Is it a spider? No, it's not a spider. It's not a scorpion. It looks a bit like a scorpion, but it's acting differently, and oh, it sprayed me with acid. I think that that's fun. I think it's not, you know, it doesn't have the immediate gut recognition of either of those two, but it can certainly work in a kind of weird alien-like kind of thing. And actually, you know, I think it almost does work as sort of an alien species. You can see this being, encountered on a planet in a science fiction game, because I think very few people will be like, oh, it's like a giant version of our Earth vinegaroon. And in fact, if you did say that, you could feel quite clever. A bit like science fiction shows or superhero comics would often use those kinds of creatures to like teach the kids at home like, a little bit of a lesson about wildlife, right? So people could come away from your game knowing something about, you know, our friend the whip scorpion that they previously didn't. And actually, I think, you know, I mean, that seems hokey and didactic and whatever, but I think there's a certain kind of charm in that. I've learned a surprising amount about wildlife while doing research for Monster Man, and I'm sure that the same is true for a lot of people, that their first exposure to some aspects of, you know, the real world was through Dungeons and Dragons. That's certainly true for a lot of people with deities and demigods and mythology, which is kind of a shame, therefore, the way that book sometimes treats mythology, but that's another story. So they're neat. I don't know that they have the absolute classic staying power of either the spider or the scorpion, but they're a fun change of pace, and they are very interesting animals in real life, which means you can probably think of some interesting things to do with them in your game. All right, that's about all the time that we have for today. Please join me next time as we both continue the holiday boss rush and our journey through the P&Q chapter of Monster Manual 2 on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.